You are listening to Hillary Topper On Air, the small business podcast to help you grow both personally and professionally. And now, here's your host, Hillary Topper.
It takes extraordinary mental fortitude for endurance runners to navigate the physical and mental aspects of training and crossing finish lines. I'm Hillary Topper, and this is Hillary Topper On Air, the Endurance Sports Edition. Today, I have the great pleasure of speaking with Jerry Dunn, America's Marathon Man. Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Thank you, Hillary. It's good to be with you.
So you've been involved in running for nearly 50 years, and which is an amazing accomplishment. Amazing. And can you share with us some of your insights and extensive experience?
I can do that. I knew you were going to ask me this question, and I've been trying to figure out how to get 48 years of running into a short interview. But I think I'll start by telling you that about 40 years ago, I came up with the slogan of "Don't limit your challenges, challenge your limits." And that's kind of how I've been progressing through this 48 years of running, by upping the ante every few years to see if I can improve on what I've been doing and stretch my boundaries. And through that process, you know, I've learned a lot about the mental toughness that it takes to accomplish some things that seem to be out of the realm of possibility, if you will. I have learned to use my running as a way to overcome some of the issues that I've had during my running career, like alcoholism and some mental issues that became more than I wanted to deal with. And I've always been able to go back to that base of running has been my salvation for dealing with a lot of things when I'm out there in my own headspace and thinking of, you know, it's a common story, but it plays well for me.
Absolutely.
And it's worked for me.
Take us back to your very first marathon, because the first is always the best. But it always holds a special place in your heart. So if you can tell us a little bit about that one, that would be great.
Well, 1981, back in the last century, over 50 years ago for that, almost, Philadelphia. And I had been training by looking up a 12-week training schedule in Runner's World magazine. Let me also say that most of everything that I have accomplished was in the last century, and it was before social media, and the resources for finding information was different than it is now. So anyway, I religiously followed that 12-week program, went to Philadelphia, and it was a rainy, cold day. And I had a race plan, but you know, your first race plan is, you know, it's hard to follow sometimes because you don't have any experience in whether this is the right plan or not. Anyway, hit the wall at 22 and struggled very much to get to the finish line. But that takes us back to that mental thing. And I was able in my first marathon to prove to myself that, yes, I could do this extreme long distance of 26.2 miles, and celebrated that with my fiance at the end of that race, and have carried that with me through all the other things that I've done. So it was a rather common first experience, but you know, everything in the running realm is common yet personal. And
so were you always a runner?
No, I hated running. In my chronology of running, the first experience I had was in the fourth grade in 1956. I ran a 50-yard dash and I won, but that was a shot in the dark. I didn't become a runner. My next running experience was the military, and that was not much fun. Heartbreak Hill in Fort Knox, running up and down that hill with a full backpack and army, all that stuff. And after the army, I said, I'll never run again. I found myself later living in Sarasota, Florida, after having built a restaurant down here and hanging out at the beach. And one of the lifeguards would not leave me alone. He said, come on and run with the lifeguard. You know, you look like a runner. I said, Johnny, I hate running. I'm not going to run. But I just to shut him up one day, I ran a quarter mile on the beach. And in fact, I'm sitting very close to that beach where Marathon Man was born. And I found that running barefoot on the beach was kind of fun. And that was in 1975. And I've been running ever since, which means that, you know, two more years, it will be a half a century of running.
Amazing.
So I was goaded into running, but found out that it was something that, Born to Run, the book, over the years I have, through the things that I've done and accomplished, it feels like maybe I was one of those people that was born to run, and I've made a career out of it. I've made a lifestyle out of it. It's been my salvation. It's been a major part of my life since 1975.
That's awesome. Really awesome. Now, is there any marathon that you did through the years, one in particular, that really stands out to you?
Well, it's Boston. And if I may tell you one of the stories, I was thinking about, as part of my introductions, I've run through all these crazy, you know, extreme projects that I've done. And Boston is, like, I call it the star in my media resume. I went to the year that Boston turned 100 years old in 1996. I went to Boston, and every morning for the 25 days before the Boston Marathon, I went out and ran the Boston Marathon course in traffic on a regular day. And then on the 15th of April, 1996, the run of the century, I finished my marathon of marathons by participating in the Boston Marathon and its 100th anniversary. So that one stands out as probably one of the most memorable of my events. But I've also, you know, I ran the Siberian International Marathon in Omsk, Siberia, one year, and that is also one that is unique, and it was very interesting. We were the only, my wife and I were the only two Americans in the race, and we were kind of celebrities at the event, but we were also really slow that day, so it ended up being that we were last because we'd stopped and given people hugs and gotten flowers from people along the route. And the course marshal and his Mercedes was behind us trying to get us to hurry up so we could get the race over with. So.
Like the balloon ladies, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about the mental fortitude. Can you discuss the mindset and mental games involved in endurance long distance? And how do you use meditation and yoga to help you?
Well, I use meditation and yoga. That's within the last 4 or 5 years that I've started to actually incorporate that into my routine. But I can, even before that, I had the capacity to get myself into the headspace where, you've chosen to do this. You still got a long way to go, but the goal is worth the effort that you put into it. And I do things like count telephone poles. I take my mind off. Well, let me back up just a minute. I learned a long time ago to embrace the pain, which sounds, you know, kind of strange, but just accept that this is the condition that I'm in right now. I'm still okay, but I just have to accept that this is not an easy task that I've chosen to do. And but I want the reward of finishing. So I continue to tell myself that, you know, just embrace what's going on and keep putting, you know, small increments of desired behavior, which means just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And again, it's a common story, but it takes a while to be in those situations enough times to really learn how to manage that and to make it work for you.
Now, before, earlier in this conversation, you talked a little bit about your battle with alcohol.
Yes.
And I know that there are so many people listening to this interview who also have struggles either with alcohol or with drugs. Could you share your experience with us and how you used running to help you with your mental well-being?
I can. A couple of things. Most people that have an addiction going on don't have much discipline in their life. And to commit to just getting up and going out and running, whatever, just, you know, that's one of the things that running helped me do, is bring some control and discipline back into my life. Also, we usually are dealing with low self-esteem when we're in our addiction. And, you know, after a period of time, my self-esteem was enhanced or helped by, yes, it's been a month now and you have gotten up every morning and you've gone out and run. And then, you know, the physiological benefits of just the running activity itself and the time to be alone and not using and spend some time in your own head and coming to believe that, you know, I am a worthy person and I can accomplish things, even if it's just running 3 miles this morning, or, you know, the day that you finally run that half marathon that you set as your goal, you know, and it started to bring me back to a sense of worthiness and accomplishment and ability to be in control of my life. And there was a carryover. I mean, early on, I was still drinking and running. But the day that I decided that I'd had enough drinking on my 37th birthday, which I just celebrated, I'm in my 48th year of sobriety, and I don't say to my 40th year. Anyway, I think what it did for me was what I've just explained, is that it brought me back to myself and it brought me to a place where I felt good about myself again. And I stopped, you know, I stopped the alcohol about a 4-year overlap. But when that went away, the interesting thing about that, however, is I took running and did it addictively, and I called it my positive addiction, you know, like this has solved everything. But even running, if anything you do in life, if you become addictive about it, whatever it is, it has the same negative effects as the substance or whatever it was that you were addicted to. So there was a period of time when I was running addictively, and it ruined a marriage because, you know, I had to do this. I'm going to run 93 marathons this year. I don't care what it does to the rest of my life. This is what I want to do. And that ended up being not such a good thing to do, you know, in a marriage. So I finally figured out that, you know, yes, this may be a positive addiction, but it still has the negative components of addictive behavior. So I dealt with that in my head and then looked at it not as an addiction, but as a challenge. And, you know, can I really do more than what I did last year? Can I run across the United States? Can I do these things? And instead of saying, you know, just, okay, I've got to do this, it's that I looked at it as a challenge instead of an obligation, if you will, you know, something that I decided I had to do. This is something I wanted to do, and just to see if I could up the ante and make that work.
I love that. Congratulations to you.
Thank you. That is awesome.
Really awesome. Thank you for sharing with us. Before we move on, I just have to say that I'm so appreciative of our sponsor and must take the time out to thank them. Please support our sponsor and tell them that you heard about them on Hillary Topper on Air. Special thanks to Boldfoot Socks, a family and veteran-owned American-sewn, American-grown sock company. Back to you, Jerry. So in your piece, Marathon Man Hits the Wall, you provide powerful insights into your experience with depression. How do you believe that sharing this story will help others facing, and, you know, we talked a little bit about this, facing these challenges and seeking solace in their own journeys?
Well, first of all, that topic of depression and mental stress in endurance athletes in the last couple of years, it's become a lot of people have decided to say, look, I can't do that. You know, I can't remember the Olympian's name, but there were people that have, you know, stopped performing because they've become so depressed. And I had gotten to that point where, you know, this is not, none of this is worth it any longer. And I was sitting in the hole for a long time and just, you know, not. And I finally put my shoes on and got back out on the road and started running. And but how I hope that it can help people is that, yes, I'm just another one of, you know, that story, but possibly I'll resonate with somebody that some of these other stories have not. And I would encourage people to, as hard as it is to do something physical. It doesn't have to be running, but, you know, force yourself. I often quote a line from Shakespeare, which is, bid me move and I will deal with things impossible. And it's amazing what, you know, the old thing, just get up and do something, you know, you'll feel better if you just get up and do something. And for me, that something is to go out and run or to go out and ride my bike. And I'm hoping that people can understand that as hard as it is to get your ass up and go do something, you know, that I proved that for myself, that it works. And for me, it's running, but that's what I'm hoping is that people, you know, it's dark down there and the only way you can see the light is to move and get up and deal with that thing that's impossible. But you can't do that just sitting in your own depression and your own, you know, wallowing in that down spot. I mean, you need to get up and do something.
It's so difficult though, when you're in that situation where you just feel like it's so dark and you can't seem to get out. Is there anything that you could offer in addition to just getting out there, is there anything that you can offer that would help our listeners, you know, try to just one tip, maybe just get, you know.
Besides just get up and do something?
Yeah. In addition to that, like, what can you say to yourself? How could you?
Well, that's say to yourself. Now, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I'm big into self-messaging, and, you know, when you're depressed and in the hole, you're only feeding yourself the message that I'm no good and I'm, you know, this is hopeless. And again, if you can just force yourself to start to, you know, say small positive, you know, I'm worthy. I'm a good person. I'm not alone in the world. Just start giving yourself positive self-messages, and you don't believe them at first. But, you know, I'm big into the brain and how it operates. And, you know, when you're learning something new, you have to do it repetitively. And it's really difficult at first, but it becomes easier. And my catchphrase for that one is think it, do it, and be it. If you start thinking that I'm an okay person, and then you'll start acting like an okay person instead of this depressed slug. And over a period of time, it may be a long period of time, but then you will be that positive, vibrant person again. So feed yourself some positive self-talk is what I would suggest. So while you're out moving, tell yourself that, you know, this is, I'm not so bad after all, you know, I got my ass off the couch and I'm out here walking along the beach or around the parking lot or whatever I'm doing. And, you know, I am okay.
And you have a beautiful place to run.
Oh, I
love Sarasota. It's gorgeous.
Have you been there?
I was there last January, and I'm coming back next January. So maybe we could meet up when I come back. But
that would be great. Did you make it to Siesta Key?
That's where I stayed.
Are you serious?
We'll talk offline, and I'll tell you how I know.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Look, can I throw out one other marathon that was rather memorable?
Yes.
Disney World, second year. I was married at the Disney World Marathon in front of the Magic Kingdom. And it was live on the NBC Today show. And I wore my tuxedo the entire race. My wife wore a wedding gown with a Velcro skirt. And I mean, come on, we got married at the Disney World Marathon. So I mean,
my God, that is awesome.
And back to social media. This was before social media. I thought it was big news that our photo went on Reuters on the wire, you know, and it showed up. I was getting the phone calls from people in other parts of the United States that say they saw the picture. Whereas today, you know, it would have been streamed live probably. And anyway, I find myself sometimes still living in a mental 20th century frame of mind, you know, and that's not real clear, but I've adapted to the 21st century and social media. I'm a bit opposed to all the, you know, what has happened to us as a culture because of technology. But I end the thought.
No, yeah, totally. I totally get it. So looking ahead, what are your goals and aspirations for the future? And how do you plan to continue challenging your limits and inspiring others through your work, through your running and advocacy work?
Well, I've just recently done a triathlon in the southern hills of South Dakota. And I'm 77 years old. And where I'm going with this is, I'm toying with the idea of creating a boomer triathlon series where what we've done at my little Southern Hills triathlon is our total age for our relay Olympic distance was 221 years old. So what we've created at that triathlon now is the 200 and above category, and your team total age has to be at least 200 years old, if not more. So I think the boomers are still a huge part of the market. There's still a lot of us old jocks and jockettes out there who are still running and swimming and cycling. And I would like to create a series just for people of that age. And that would encourage older people to stay active. And it would also be a role model for, you know, because I hear all the time, boy, I hope do what you're doing when I'm your age, and hope. And I always tell them, well, get started now and keep doing it. Otherwise it's not going to happen. So hopefully, you know, I can be encouraging to younger athletes as well.
I love that. And I'm in. So just be posted on it. And finally, how can people get in touch with you to learn more about you and, you know,
either my website, I have a website that needs some attention, but there are some, my email, I mean, people, I like, you know, one-on-one communication, but so my email address can be made public, and my web address is americasmarathonman.com. And I'm, you know, I'm not active on, I'm on Facebook and I have an Instagram account, but I'm not, people can contact me that way. I check it every once in a while. Part of the struggle for me is, do I want to you know, I am 77. I'm enjoying the lifestyle that I have. I do realize that what I have to say can be helpful to some people, but I'm struggling with how much I want to get back out in the public eye, because I'm really having fun traveling around the world. And, you know, 2 years ago, I did the Ilalo Volcano Mountain Marathon in Ecuador. And last year, I rode the entire coast of Ecuador, me and a buddy of mine along. And so not that I couldn't do both, but, you know, when you're out there and you're trying to get people to come to you and seek your advice, it takes time and energy, and I'm still on the line of whether I want to jump back into the pool or not.
Right, exactly.
But I'm very inclined to have people connect with me, and, you know, just on a one-to-one basis, I feel like I'm just as effective, but not as broadly effective, but I love getting, you know, connecting with people. So, you know, send me an email, jerrydunnsd@gmail.com. And, you know, we can strike up, I'm not one to give training tips or coaching or anything like that. It's more like the things we've talked about. And not that the people that connect with me need to be struggling, but, you know, I'm not one to come to for nutritional tips and coaching and all that. It's more like, you know, what we've talked about is the mindset and the benefits of becoming or remaining, you know, a disciplined, active person.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jerry, for being on the show. This has been so inspiring, and I really, really appreciate you being here. I also want to thank our sponsor once more, Boldfoot Socks, a family and veteran-owned, American-sewn, American-grown sock company. For more information, visit boldfoot.com. I'd also like to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you want more information on this show or any other show, visit our website at hillarytopper.com. Or you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Alexa, you name it, we're out there. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.